Good morning, church. Man, that song gets me every time. Love that song. It's one of my very, very favorites that we sing. Right up there. So it's so good to be with you. It is so good to have those of you who've been traveling back, and I know we've got some others who are off now, but it is good to be together as a family. I appreciated Rob and Zach's both bringing that out. Now, for those of you who are staying for the shower, everybody's invited to stay. If you didn't bring a dish, that's perfectly fine. There's plenty of time for you to go and get something and bring it for the rest of us. No, if you're staying, that's great. If you brought a gift for the bride and groom, they are very thankful. They appreciate that. As you go in, on your right, there will be a table for you to put those gifts. There's going to be a place for you to put those gifts. And there is also a thank you note station. And so if you are thankful for the gift you brought, please write yourself a note. Now, the thank you note station is just there so that you can write your address on an envelope so they can send you a thank you card. They want to thank you for the gifts you've brought. And so there's just a place for an envelope, and you just write your address on there so that Jed and Maria aren't trying to learn how to use a phone book. It is incredibly difficult sometimes to track some of your addresses down. I'm here to tell you that would really help them out in the process. I am thrilled for Jed and for Maria. And Rebecca and I know something about what it's like to start your new life in youth ministry. We have been there and done that. When Rebecca and I got engaged, she thought she was marrying a stockbroker in Nashville. She was going to be moving to Nashville, of course, and go to Lipscomb University, and we'd be living near family and friends. It was going to be so great. And instead, she wound up marrying a youth minister in the far northwest remote corner of Tennessee, far away from friends and family, and she knew absolutely no one there. Going to school at a school, she knew no one, and it was adapting to that new life was pretty difficult, pretty challenging. And more than once, we questioned whether or not we were doing the right thing in the right place in the right way. And it was a few years later, we had moved to West Kentucky, and we were working with a church there, and things had sort of settled down, and we had found a rhythm to ministry, a life that we were much more comfortable with in ministry and in our roles. And I was asked to come sit on this panel. There was a local Christian, private Christian school. And I had several of my teens who went to school there, so they asked me to come sit on this panel discussion, and the kids could ask us questions. And specifically, they wanted us to know about our being called to ministry. That was the big question. Now, they asked us to relate our stories of being called to ministry. And most of the other ministers on this panel were affiliated with the more charismatic churches in the area. And they had some awesome stories. I mean, stories about God's calling them, and it was like, you know, they heard the voice of God, or they received this amazing sign from God about their calling into ministry. And there I was, with my boring old Church of Christ stories about getting a literal phone call from a literal guy I knew who asked me to be their literal youth ministry. I'm like, I guess that was my calling to ministry because Jimmy called me. I wasn't even sure how I was supposed to answer that question. Most of us, especially within Churches of Christ, but not exclusively that, but most of us don't have those big dynamic stories. We don't have stories like the Apostle Paul on the road to Damascus, where Jesus appears to him in the person and he's blinded and has this conversation, right? Most of us don't have stories like that. And if someone were to ask us about God's calling of us into discipleship, we might be a little uncertain about how to answer what they're asking. They're like, what? You know, you believe you were called to be a Christian, called to be a disciple. What does that even mean? So this morning, as we continue our discipleship series, I want us to try to flesh it out a little bit. What does it mean that you and I have been called to be disciples? What does this call to discipleship mean? Specifically, what does it look like? Like, what specifically is discipleship about? And last week, you may recall that, I'll have to remember not to do that again, sorry. Jesus calls us, it involves it involved a face-to-face conversation, right? Like, Jesus went and he looked at them, like he looked at Matthew and he said, you know, come follow me. Or he looked at Peter, Andrew, James, and John on the seashore mending their nets and is like, come follow me. And that Jesus' call to discipleship was literally a call to follow him wherever he went, to go where he was going, to do what he was doing, to listen and repeat what he was teaching. The call of Jesus was also a call to Jesus. It was not just like every other discipleship program that was out there. And there were other people who had disciples. Jewish rabbis and Greek philosophers both had disciples who would commit themselves to this teaching or to a specific cause, right? They would go and they would tutor and learn under a Jewish rabbi or a Greek philosopher. But the call of Jesus wasn't like that. The call of Jesus was entirely personal. His disciples were supposed to follow him. They were supposed to have faith in him. They were supposed to come and live and repent of their sins and believe in him. It was a very personal call. And so when Jesus says, follow me, like we believe he is calling you and I to discipleship this morning, when Jesus says, follow me, he's inviting us to this intimate relationship with himself. And this relationship that we started talking about last week, it has three facets or three implications. That's what we're calling it, a three-way calling this morning. Do you remember the first time you heard three-way calling and you're like, I'm talking to two different people in two different places at the same time? There's three people on this call and it is all coming together in one place. And that's sort of what this is like, because this calling of Jesus, this calling to Jesus, it is broad. It covers a wide range of areas that we need to talk about. Number one, it means that we are called to obey, right? To be a disciple of Jesus means that we are binding ourselves to ultimately do God's will. You cannot be a disciple of Jesus and not follow the will of God. Some people have really gotten confused about that. They believe that following Jesus doesn't really require anything of them. But Jesus makes it really clear that following him, being a disciple of his, means doing the will of God. So in John 14, for instance, great chapter, you've probably heard it, just that Jesus is teaching his disciples. He's about to leave, and he talks about that, in my Father's house are many mansions. You probably heard those verses, right? And he tells them that whoever keeps his commands is going to be the one who loves him. He's like, if you keep my commands, you're the one who loves me. And if you love me, my Father will love you. And really key here, he says, I will reveal myself to you. If you love me, my Father will love you, and I will reveal myself to you. So Judas, and most translations make points to say this, not Judas Iscariot. Because, you know, Judas Iscariot was a bad guy. We really don't know. It just was a Judas. But this Judas person speaks up and says, wait a minute. Why would you show yourself just to us? I mean, if you are who you say you are, if you are the Son of God, why would you not reveal yourself to the whole world? That sounds like a good question to me, right? Why would Jesus only reveal himself to those who loved him, those who were his disciples? Why not reveal yourself to the entire world? And this is Jesus' response to that. He says, anyone who loves me will obey my teaching. My Father will love them, and we will come to them and make our home with them. And then he stresses again, anyone who does not love me will not obey my teaching. In fact, these words you're hearing, they're not my words. They're the words of thy Father who sent me, right? We're called to obey the Father, in other words, just the way Jesus obeyed the Father. We make a lot out of Jesus' sinless life. And that's really important. I think it's great that we emphasize that. It can be a little daunting when you're trying to follow someone who's sinless, but we understand the concept that Jesus did the will of God perfectly, right? Whatever God commanded, whatever God said, Jesus did. Now, this was, again, very different than other disciples of their day. If you were a disciple of a rabbi, or if you were a disciple of a Greek philosopher, then what you would do is you would learn their teaching, you would follow them, you'd learn all about it. But once you kind of passed out of that discipleship, you were no longer bound to that, right? Once you become a rabbi yourself, or once you become a philosopher yourself, you don't have to do what the old rabbi or the old philosopher said. But the disciples of Jesus are called to unconditional obedience forever. Like for their whole lives. You will never hit a point in your maturity, in your Christian journey, you'll never come to a point where you're like, okay, I understood why we had those rules when I was younger, but now I've sort of outgrown that. I'm mature enough that I can understand I don't have to literally do that. And that happens in other parts of our lives where we were like, okay, your parents say, you know, don't cross the street without me. And then once we get up, we get old enough, we're like, oh, I can figure out how to cross the street myself. That rule no longer applies to me. I can turn the stove on. That rule no longer applies to me. I can put things into the electric socket. That rule no longer applies to me. But Jesus says, you're never going to outgrow my teaching. You're never going to mature beyond it the way disciples and others are. So when we agree to follow Jesus, what we're saying is that we're going to submit every aspect of our lives to that level of scrutiny, that we're going to put everything we do and measure it up against the standard of Jesus' teaching. And we're going to ask ourselves things like, am I practicing patience the way Jesus taught? Am I practicing humility the way Jesus taught? Am I being honest the way Jesus taught? Am I being generous? Like Jesus said, in every aspect, we're called to obey throughout our lives. So we receive this call to obedience, but that's not all. Our calling to discipleship is also a call to serve, right? The call of Jesus always, 100% of the time, includes a calling to serve. Too often in today's culture, some Christians have this idea that a call to follow Jesus is a call to power. Because historically in our culture, Christianity has been in power. We think that following Jesus means that we'll now be in power, that as it'll be a call to enforce our will on the people around us, our friends or our family or our community. But that's not the way of Jesus. In fact, Jesus directly taught against that. Matthew chapter 20, verses 25 through 28 says, you know, talking to his disciples, he says, you know, the rulers of the Gentiles, and they're like, yes, we're very familiar with the Romans who rule us with an iron fist. We know the way of the Gentiles. And he says, you know how they lord it over them. Yeah, we know how they lord it over us. And their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first must be your slave. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. Now, again, let's be careful how we apply this, because did Jesus go around teaching about right and wrong? Yes, he absolutely did. But that wasn't, Jesus' teaching, by the way, was mostly not revolutionary. If you look at what Jesus taught, you can go back and find most of what he said in the Old Testament. Like it had already been said. Prophets had said it. Moses had said it. it was in the Psalms, or it was somewhere. Almost everything Jesus said was straight out of the Old Testament. He wasn't teaching that much new. It wasn't that what Jesus was telling them, they're like, oh, I never knew that before. Of course, they'd heard it before. It had been taught before. They'd heard it in temple, or they'd heard it in their communities of faith. But what was different about Jesus was the way that he lived it out, right? He was giving himself over and over and over again. He was washing the feet of those who were beneath him, his followers. He was giving his life for those who were trying to murder him. What was different about Jesus wasn't what he said, but how he lived what he said. So often I hear Christians bemoaning the fact that our country is not as Christian as it once was, that the world is somehow winning over Christianity. But the truth is, we're losing at the game the world plays. Does that make sense? We're losing a wrestling for power, which is what Jesus is talking about. Wrestling for power, that's what the Gentiles do. And they get that power and they lord it over their subjects and over the people that are beneath them. He goes, that's not the way it is to be with you. The world doesn't need better power strugglers. The world needs more self-sacrificing followers of Jesus. More people who are laying down their lives in service to their families and to their communities. More selflessness, more service. More disciples who live the way that Jesus lived and not just talk the way Jesus talked. Those two have to go hand in hand if we're going to be disciples of Jesus. It's a call to serve. And finally, Jesus tells us that the call to discipleship is not a call to individuality, but it is a call to community life. Yes, we know the song, Jesus called them one by one, Peter, Andrew, James, and John, and it's true, Jesus goes and he calls them often by name, right? He calls them one by one, but responding to that call did not mean it was now just you and Jesus. In other words, Jesus calls Matthew by name, right? He says, come follow me. Matthew comes and follows Jesus, but it's not Matthew by himself, is it? He calls Peter and Andrew and James and John, but it's not just Peter and Jesus. It's not just John and Jesus. It's a call to a community of disciples following Jesus. Jesus calls his disciples to share their lives with him and with one another. They're supposed to lose their independence and learn interdependence. Jesus is like, this is not just about you and me. This is about me and y'all, right? The plural you. They're supposed to share everything together. Their joys, their sorrows, their pains, even their physical possessions. Everything gets shared together. Remember that we're called to live with Christ in the same way he lived with his Father. And when Jesus is just before he's on the eve of his arrest, in John chapter 17, the only gospel to record this prayer, it's called Jesus' high priestly prayer. And when Jesus is there praying, he's not praying about his upcoming arrest and trial and crucifixion. When he's there praying, at least the parts that John captures, it's about the disciples. It's about us. And when Jesus prays for his followers, he says this to God. He says, I pray for them, right? The disciples. He's already kind of made that clear just a couple of verses earlier. I'm praying for them, for the followers, for Peter, Andrew, James, and John, those guys who are asleep over there on the ground. I'm praying for them. I'm not praying about the whole world right now, but I'm praying for the ones you've given me, for they are yours. All I have is yours, and all you have is mine. All glory has come to me through them. Jesus is calling us to a community, to live life with one another, to help one another, to love one another. All I have is yours, all you have is mine. And he tells these disciples, in fact, that they're his literal family. He's like, if you do what my Father says, you're my literal family. You'll be my mother and my brothers. You'll be my community, not my blood relations. To those of us who were raised and reared in Western culture, again, this sounds really dangerous. It sounds like socialism or maybe even in communism, but it's not. Notice what Jesus says is not take from your neighbor until you're even. And that's essentially what a government threat is. Or you're going to do it at the point of a gun. In other words, you're going to give until everybody's even at the point of a gun or a jail cell or to be sent off to some prison camp. That's not what Jesus is saying. He said, this is not out of duty. This is not because of the law. This is out of your love that you are choosing to do this. Someone might be able to force you at the point of a gun to give until everybody's even. But to do that robs the gift of its blessing. Right? Imagine that I found out you are in need and you're like, my family, we're just really struggling. We need somebody to come and help us, whether it's financially or with emotional support or just being present or physical help, whatever it is. You need something. And I show up and I knock on your door and I say, hey, it's me, Dustin. I love you. I just want to do whatever you need. I mean, what a blessing that would be, right? Now imagine, same scenario, you're still in need, and at your door you hear a knock. And I'm like, it's me. Bob says I got to do this. Now, which one is a blessing to you? The one where I choose to help you, the one where I'm being forced to help you. Jesus says Christian community looks like loving giving, loving sharing, about bringing one another in, and what's mine is yours, and what's yours is mine, and you're struggling, I'm struggling. You're celebrating, I'm celebrating. You're grieving, I'm grieving. We want to go through this together. It's why Scripture goes to great lengths to say that Jesus' life was not taken from him. You begin to notice that? Those Roman soldiers and the Jewish leaders, they didn't take Jesus' life. Jesus gave his life. It goes to great lengths to point out that Jesus voluntarily laid down his life, not because he couldn't get away from it, but because he chose to give. And when you put all this together, you get something of an idea of what it means to be called a disciple. So when someone asks you, what does it mean that you're being called to be a disciple? It's a call to obey the teachings of Christ, to serve the world and one another, and do that within the context of community. We are called to obey and serve in community. And we together build ramps for people who are in need. We together feed those who are hungry. We together provide shelter for those who are being kicked out of their homes. We together, we do this, and that's the image of discipleship we're called to. Yes, that requires something of you personally, but it requires something of us all communally. And if you're not living a life of obedience or a life of service or a life in community, that's not the call to the discipleship of Jesus. We want you to call you to come obey with us. Help us obey. We'll help you obey. Come serve with us. Serve. Help us serve. We'll help you serve. Come live in community because we need you just as we all need one another, right? And we all stand in need of Christ. That this morning, if we can lift you up for encouragement, for prayer, for forgiveness, to come into this new life, this new discipleship that Jesus has promised, if we can help you in any way, won't you come as we stand and as we sing?